Wednesday, April 9th, 2025. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope your week is going well, and that you, your family, your friends, you're all staying strong. You're all staying healthy right now, and we have so much to get to today. Honestly, we've got to jump in right now. You know, I know there was talk about how the NCAA tournament this year didn't have as many upsets. It didn't have as many buzzer beaters or Cinderellas. And believe me, I get that. But we did still have some fun games. Well, Saturday night, the Final Four was absolutely awesome. We had good games. We had interesting matchups. And both games came down to the wire. In the first game, Florida beat Auburn 79-73 in what was a back-and-forth kind of rock fight for 40 minutes. But the Gators just had too much depth, and they had better guard play. Thanks to a monster night from the field, point guard Walter Clayton Jr. put himself in the category of best Final Four performance ever. He had 32 points against a pretty solid Auburn defense who was relying on their big man Jani Broome in the paint. And Clayton's 34 points made him the first player to have back-to-back 30-point games in the Elite Eight and the Final Four since Larry Bird did it back in 79. The Gators trailed Auburn. They rallied late. They came back and got the win. And then, in the other game, you know, we had said there weren't that many upsets this year. Well, the Houston Cougars pulled off a big one on Saturday night when they upset the Duke Blue Devils in Game 2. The Blue Devils fall to the Cougars 70-67 in a choke job that will haunt players and fans for years to come. I mean, get this. Cooper Flagg and his teammates were up by 14 with a little over 8 minutes left, and then they watched that lead evaporate in the final minutes. Duke made just 2 field goals in the last 13 minutes of the game. Houston came up with timely buckets. They went on an 11-1 run in the final minute 14. And Cooper Flagg, who had 27 points on the night, hey, he played well. He came up short in the end. I mean, think about this, though. Duke is the only team to have an NCAA tournament game with a higher field goal percentage, more free throw attempts, more assists, less turnovers, more steals than their opponent, and lost. Never happened before. Teams had been 335-0 when they did that. And yet, this isn't on Cooper Flagg. No, I hate to say this, but this is actually on head coach John Shire. See, the basketball gods who are real, you might not believe it, but watch, I'll prove it. The basketball gods bit John Shire on Saturday night, and I'll explain how. Because Shire never adjusted. He didn't run many sets late. He relied on those young, talented kids a little bit too much. But here's the thing. Let me ask you a question, Daily Dose listener. Do you trust 18-year-old kids to do the right thing with the basketball, with the game on the line? No, I don't, and you shouldn't. I'm going to have them run a set to get better looks. And yet, look at that final shot that they got for Flagg. Shire basically ran isolation for Cooper Flagg, had no action on the backside. Freshman Cooper Flagg is going against like a ninth-year senior in Houston who did play him pretty well. And Flagg shot the ball way too early. He shot it with about 7 seconds left. Had he made it, game wouldn't have been over. Houston could have still got down there and scored. So the whole thing was poorly managed. But from Shire's standpoint, you trusted a kid that was supposed to still be in high school to win a Final Four game one-on-one by himself, and the basketball gods did not approve. The shot fell short. Also, and I've been saying this for the past few weeks, Duke's average margin of victory in the ACC was 21 points per game. They weren't used to being in a tight game, and it showed. I know Duke fans are feeling it this week. I know they had a rough weekend. But Duke fans, I want you to take heart. because baseball season is underway. And I just know most of you are now Yankees fans and probably Lakers fans, maybe Cowboys fans. So hang in there. Okay, so then we get to Championship Monday, where we had, if not the best two teams, we had the two most resilient teams of the tournament. Congratulations to the Florida Gators, who won the college basketball national championship on Monday by beating the Houston Cougars 65-63. And like I said, the Gators proved to be the most resilient team in the tournament this year. They trailed their opponents significantly in four of their six games, but in the clutch, they found ways to make plays. And it happened again on Monday. After leading 8-6 early in the first half, the Gators did not lead that game again until there were just 46 seconds remaining. Hey, they trailed by as many as 12 in the second half. But in those tight games, these Gators seemed to thrive. After not scoring a point in the first half, point guard Walter Clayton Jr., he found ways to make big plays in the second half. He was named the most outstanding player of the tournament, and I think we saw him climb up draft boards a little bit. But what was interesting was it wasn't the Florida offense that won the game for him. It was their defense. Houston had just four turnovers in the first 36 minutes of the game, but in the last 3 minutes of the game, they turned it over five times, including three times in the final minute. Hey, during one stretch in the second half, Florida got stops on nine straight Houston possessions. No, their defense won them the game. Head coach Todd Golden became the youngest coach in history to win the title since Jimmy Valvano back in 83 at North Carolina State. And you know, it was a tough loss for Houston coach Kelvin Sampson. I felt for him because he had the Gators right where he wanted them. That game on Monday was a Houston-style game. And yet it was Florida that came out on top. And one thing I do wonder, did Houston get tired? Remember the energy that they expended to beat Duke on Saturday night? They faded late. And I have to wonder if it was fatigue from that Final Four game. Either way, the Gators wore them out, and they are your national champions. Side note, the University of Florida actually becomes the first team ever to win three titles now in both football and basketball. No one has done that. They say you can't be successful at both, but Florida has now won three titles in each. I do have to mention one more thing about the title game, though, and I'm sure it won't get talked about much in the sports media world, but the officiating crew once again had a rough night on Monday night. That was a poorly executed game by that crew because they started out by not calling anything whatsoever. They swallowed their whistles. There were four total fouls called in the first half. And then in the second half, they tried to rein in the physicality that they had already allowed by calling 16 fouls in the first 12 minutes of the second half. They called 27 fouls total in the second half. Well, the result was players were confused. They were frustrated. And I'm not saying the outcome was affected because it was bad both ways, but it was just a poor job of officiating. You know, they always told us when you're reffing a big game, call it tight early and then let them play late. That is usually the blueprint for these big games. And this crew did exactly the opposite. And the problem was it made for a choppy game. And like I said, it made for frustrated coaches, players, and definitely fans. The NCAA has got to step up their officiating. That was rough on Monday night. But of course, the biggest news of the week, beyond the national championship being decided, was that the Daily Dose March Madness Bracket Challenge is now complete. And right now, we need to announce the final rankings of our Bracket Challenge. Coming in tied at number 10, well, are actually Mrs. Dose and my son, Mr. Dose, I guess. They come in tied at number 10. At number 9, we have Kebby's picks. Well done, Keb. Who knew Kebby was going to get in this thing? Number 7 goes to Jay Engler, who had Houston winning it all. If Houston did win it all, Jay would have won this thing. I actually came in at number 6. Generic ESPN picker that didn't come up with a name. They came in at number 5. Hall of Famer Troy Tulowitzki came in tied for 4th. I don't know who that is. They were tied for fourth with Jacob. Hey, well done, Jacob. You know, Jacob's doing some sports announcing down in Oklahoma, I think. Might have to get Jacob on the dose sometime. But nice job, Jacob. Another ESPN picker that didn't enter their name. They came in at number two. And the winner of the 2025 Daily Dose Bracket Challenge and new champion T. Farron comes in with 1,690 total points. Well done, T. Farron. That is actually my boy, Todd. That is Todd down in New Mexico. I believe he is down in Albuquerque. Todd is the Daily Dose Bracket Challenge winner. You know what? That actually makes me really happy. Todd is one of my oldest, dearest friends. You know, we actually went to second grade together. I think that was back, that before Civil War, post-Civil War. I don't know. It was a long time ago. But T. Farron is our Daily Dose Bracket Challenge winner. I am very happy to send him a Daily Dose t-shirt. Todd, I thank you for listening. Let me know what size and color you want. We will make that happen. But I want to say thank you to everyone who participated. Thank you for listening. Thank you for participating in the Bracket Challenge. It is genuinely appreciated. And you know what? Every year, it just seems like we grow a little bit more. Hey, speaking of Daily Dose gear, remember, you should be stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week to see what new things we have going on over there. We have links to the podcast. We have links to new articles. One went up this week about the Denver Nuggets prior to some big news that we're going to talk about in a minute. So you should check that out. And we do have links to Daily Dose gear over there. Maybe you didn't win the bracket challenge, but you still want a t-shirt. Maybe you want a hoodie. Maybe you want a hat. Maybe you want a sweatshirt. Hey, you can go over to DailyDoseSports.com and get those. Also, you can always email the podcast at DailyDoseSports@gmail.com. We do hear from listeners now and then. It's good to hear from them sometimes. And you know, if it's good enough, we might end up using it on the show. Hey, today on The Dose, we're actually going to be talking a little about Major League Baseball. Going to let you know which teams you should be watching this season. And we will have a Daily Dose top five for you. You might not realize that college basketball has really turned into kind of a regional sport. Oh, but it has. But first, we've got a little bit of news to discuss this week on The Dose. And let's get started in the NBA with one of the biggest stories, really, in America, where the Denver Nuggets have fired head coach Michael Malone and general manager Calvin Booth. Now, this move comes amid a four-game losing streak. The Nuggets are now 47-32. They are currently in fourth place in the Western Conference. But remember, Malone led the Nuggets to an NBA championship just 2 years ago. He is 471-327 in 10 seasons as the team's coach. And remember, this franchise does not have a history of success. They have a history of being garbage. He turned that around. Booth has been the Nuggets GM for the past three seasons. His first season was Denver's championship season back in 22-23. But why in the world would the Nuggets do this right now? They have just three games left. They're currently, like I said, the number four seed in the West. Well, the Nuggets brass says it's about giving our group the best chance at competing for the NBA title. Yeah, that's a bunch of BS. I don't buy that for a second. Can I tell you what I think happened? I think this got personal. I think ownership was butting heads with Malone and Booth about Malone's, let's say, odd substitution patterns. And about the fact that he doesn't really like to play young guys. If a young guy goes in and makes a mistake, he pulls him right back out. If a veteran goes in and makes a mistake, he's a veteran. He'll figure it out. He leaves him in there. And I think they began butting heads over that. And I would assume they were butting heads about this. And Malone probably said something like, well, what are you going to do about it? And this is the result. Here's the problem. This year, specifically, Malone was dealt a terrible hand. Think about this. Since the Nuggets won that title back in 23, they have lost Bruce Brown and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Both were 3-and-D guys. They could shoot the three, and they could play D. That is exactly what this team needs and no longer has. No, because instead of going and getting another one of those kind of guys or re-signing one of those guys, this front office brain trust decided the best replacement for 3-and-D was Russell Westbrook, a guy that can't knock down threes in an empty gymnasium. Well, that's a bad fit. Aaron Gordon and Jamal Murray can't seem to stay healthy anymore. Right now, Nikola Jokic's most consistent teammate is a young kid named Christian Brown, and it's honestly not that close. Hey, this team was doomed from the start of this season because that front office did nothing. Now, why did they do it now? Like I said, I think this got personal. This was, your team has quit. Well, this is the team you gave me. Well, you aren't doing a good job. You aren't playing the young guys. Well, then fire me. And here we are. So here's a question. How does this affect the Denver Nuggets right now, right here in the present? Well, they most likely went from getting swept in the opening round of the playoffs before they fired him to now getting swept in the first round of the playoffs. Okay, so I guess it doesn't really affect them that much, but next year it might affect them more. We'll see who they end up hiring. Staying in the NBA, last Friday the NBA announced that Memphis Grizzlies guard Ja Morant must fork over $75,000 for a handgun celebration he did not once, but twice. On Tuesday, Morant mocked Golden State Warriors guard Buddy Hield while he was on the bench by pretending to point a gun at him. Hield had done the same thing to Morant a few minutes before. Of course, Hield hasn't already been suspended for it. But for this incident, the NBA simply issued a warning to Ja Morant. However, after that warning, Morant then felt a need to do the celebration again in the very next game. On Thursday night, he hit a three-pointer. It wasn't big. It wasn't a game winner. While playing against the Miami Heat, and as he ran back down the court, he posed his arms in a way that imitated firing a shotgun. Now, like I said, Morant has a history of gun-related incidents off the court. Twice in the span of 2 months back in 23, he flashed a handgun on Instagram Live. He got two separate suspensions. But let's get a few things clear here. One, Ja Morant is clearly an idiot. He simply cannot control himself. And what's funny is this is not a street kid. This is not a rough, tough kid. This is a kid that grew up in a very well-to-do family with both parents in the household. He's just being a fool. Second, this actually says more about NBA Commissioner Adam Silver than it does about Morant. Because he warned Morant not to do it, and Morant simply said, yeah, whatever, nerd. I'll do exactly what I want. And what was Silver's response? He fined him $75,000. Now, that sounds like a lot to you or I. But remember, Ja Morant makes $230 million. That would be the equivalent of us being fined around 30 bucks. Okay, big who cares. If you got the opportunity to tell your boss exactly what you thought of him for 30 bucks, hey, who amongst us wouldn't do it? I know I would. Again, Adam Silver is the worst commissioner in all of professional sports, and here is more proof of that. He just wants to be friends with the players, and he doesn't even care if they dunk his head in the toilet. He's just like, oh, come on, guys. We're buddies, right? Nerd! Finishing up over in the NHL. Yes, we can talk NHL here if we need to. But we did have a big story in the NHL. Washington Capitals star Alex Ovechkin scored goal number 895 on Sunday. That puts him past Hall of Famer Wayne Gretzky to become the NHL's all-time leading goal leader. The 39-year-old Ovechkin, on a pass from his longtime teammate Tom Wilson, netted the record breaker against the New York Islanders with a power play goal with 12:34 left in the second period of Sunday's game. And then we saw Ovechkin dive on the ice. You could tell it meant a lot to him. That was the 1,487th game of his career, which is crazy because that is the same amount it took Gretzky. So it wasn't like it took him a ton more games. And with Gretzky and NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman in attendance, the game came to a stop. Players and fans celebrated the historic moment. Hey, this is impressive. This is amazing. He caught the great one. We didn't think it could happen. And now Alex Ovechkin is just 1,239 assists behind Gretzky. I mean, based on his career so far, he just has to play into like his early 70s, as long as he doesn't slow down this pace. Early 70s, he could break that assist record as well. Hey, that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Okay, so I know we don't talk a ton of baseball here on the Doze, but it is spring.
You know, spring, rejuvenation, rebirth, everything's blooming, all that crap.
And baseball season is underway. But who are the teams to watch this year in baseball? Which teams are going to contend for a title come this fall? Right now, we are going to bring you our Daily Dose Major League Baseball Power Rankings. Let's count down the five teams that are actually capable of winning the World Series this year. And I'll be honest, I think it is five teams and these five teams only. And that is it. We'll see if I'm right, but I have a feeling that I am. Starting off at number five, I have a team that might surprise you because I have them this low. But you know what? They slipped a little over the weekend. They lost the game to the Philadelphia Phillies. But obviously, the Los Angeles Dodgers are once again loaded. They've reloaded that roster once again. And while they are still looking at strengthening a few spots in the lineup, hey, the Dodgers are in the hunt. I'm going to put them right now at number five. At the number four spot, I will put the Dodgers of Los Angeles. Yeah, the Dodgers, like I said, are still trying to fortify that pitching rotation. But with all the talent that they have, it's probably going to come around by season's end. The Dodgers are obviously loaded, but they've got to stay healthy. They already lost pitcher Blake Snell to some early shoulder inflammation. And that, to me, would be a way that this team could derail. They've got to overcome injuries. They did it last year. It took a while. But in the end, they were able to overcome those injuries and dominate the postseason. I will place the Dodgers at number four. At the number three spot in Major League Baseball right now, I have a team you might not expect to be here. But I will put the LA Dodgers at number three. You know, the one thing I want to watch with the Dodgers this season, can they stay focused? Because the MLB season is so long. They're going to be playing multiple games every week for like the next 6-7 months. Yes, I know the Dodgers are talented, but can they keep playing at a high level from now all the way through the long hot summer into the fall when the stakes get turned up? Right now, I'll place the Dodgers at number three. At number two, I will put a team that just has so much talent over the field, and that for me is the Dodgers of Los Angeles. When you look at this LA lineup, there just aren't many weaknesses. And here's what's crazy to think about. Freddie Freeman is out. He's hurt. Roky Sasaki, Tanner Scott, they have been struggling. They're going to get better. Max Muncy has been all but invisible. Mookie Betts has been in and out of the lineup. Remember, he had some health issues, and it hasn't mattered. The Dodgers just keep on rolling. And what if everyone does get healthy and playing well? Yeah, then the Dodgers are going to be really tough. I've got them at number two. But the number one team in Major League Baseball to me this year has got to be the defending World Series champion Los Angeles Dodgers. There just aren't any weaknesses. After winning the title last year, the Dodgers became the first defending championship team to start the following season 5-0 since the 85 Tigers. They're just going to get better. They started at 8-0. That's the best start ever by a defending champion. Tommy Edman is producing no matter where he is in the lineup. The Dodgers are spending nearly $400 million on their roster. And hey, since MLB doesn't want a salary cap, the rich just keep getting richer. Don't get me wrong. Other teams are spending too. We know the Mets, Yankees, Phillies, Blue Jays, Astros, Rangers, Braves. They're all spending money. I get it. But the Dodgers are spending more than anyone. Oh, and they're also getting the production out of that payroll. When I look at Major League Baseball this season, I just can't see anyone outside of these five teams winning the World Series this year. It's these five teams and that's it. I think it's going to be really, really tough for any other team besides the five we named this week on the Dose. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose top five. Okay, I'm going to say something and it's going to sound insane. But college basketball is an Eastern United States sport. I know that this year it was Florida versus Houston. But come on. Flint, what are you talking about? Basketball was created on the East Coast, yes, in Massachusetts, to be exact. But hey, college hoops, it's a sport of the heartland. Think of the talent in the Midwest. Think of the talent on the West Coast. College basketball isn't just an East Coast thing. What in the world are you talking about? Where are you getting this? Well, I'm saying it because it's true. Quick, name the last five times that a team west of either Lawrence, Kansas or Dallas, Texas won a national championship. I'll give you a minute. Yeah, never mind. Right now, our Daily Dose Top 5 will do it for you as we count down the last five times that a team out west won a title. And as you'll see, we're going to have to go back a while. Let's start off at number five. And let's go clear back to the late 60s and early 70s. After winning back-to-back titles in 64 and 65, the UCLA Bruins actually missed the tournament in 66. Oh, but then they made up for it. Because from 67 until 72, the Bruins rolled off seven straight national titles. Head coach John Wooden had it rolling in Westwood. First, it was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Lucius Allen and Mike Warren and Lynn Shackelford. Then it was Kareem with Curtis Rowe and Sidney Wicks. Then it was Wicks and Henry Bibby. Then Steve Patterson came along. And then a big redhead named Bill Walton showed up. And the Bruins just won title after title after title. At this time, you might have actually said that college basketball was a West Coast thing. Oh, but that would change very soon. The UCLA Bruins winning seven straight titles from 67 to 73 comes in at number five. We reach number four. And we jump ahead just 2 years to 1975. In 74, senior center Bill Walton and the Bruins actually came up short against David Thompson and North Carolina State. But in 75, the Bruins were back. Now, this team didn't have Walton. They didn't have Abdul-Jabbar. They were led by Dave Myers, Richard Washington, and Marques Johnson. They scraped out wins over Judd Heathcote's Montana team. By the way, that team had a kid named Michael Ray Richardson on it. Might have heard of him. And then they beat Danny Crum and Louisville in the Final Four before beating Kentucky in the championship. From 64 to 75, UCLA won 10 titles. That's a record that I just can't see being beaten ever. The 75 Bruins kept the title out west, and they come in today at number four. Okay, so from 1975, we have to jump forward 15 years to the year 1990, and we get to a team that is still considered one of the best ever. You know, Jerry Tarkanian had some pretty serious success when he was at Long Beach State, but when he showed up in Sin City, he cranked it up. The UNLV Running Rebels had started playing D1 hoops back in 69, but had never made a tournament until Tark the Shark showed up in 73. And he changed that quick. The Rebels made the tournament 10 times with Tarkanian. They had gone to the Final Four in 77 and again in 87. But in 1990, the Rebels were just different. JUCO transfer Larry Johnson had joined guards Anderson Hunt and Greg Anthony. And then Tark added do-everything forward Stacey Ogman and rebounder Moses Scurry, and UNLV just destroyed everyone in their path. In 1990, UNLV beat Little Rock, Ohio State, Ball State, Loyola Marymount, Georgia Tech in the Final Four, and finally Duke in the title game by an average of nearly 20 points per game. Hey, the West was on top of the world. Oh, but it wouldn't last. 1990 UNLV comes in at number three. We reached number two on our list of college basketball teams out west that won March Madness, and we've got to jump forward another 5 years. It had been 20 years since UCLA had won a title, but in 1995, the Bruins were back. Of course, John Wooden was gone, and the Bruins had been through coaches like Gene Bartow and Gary Cunningham and Larry Brown and Larry Farmer and Walt Hazard, but then they got a guy named Jim Herrick. And while Jim was dealing in the NIL stuff before any of us knew what that even was, he did get some talent back to Westwood. Herrick got Ed O'Bannon and Charles O'Bannon and Tyus Edney and a freshman named Toby Bailey, and it was like old times again. UCLA rolled to a 32-1 record and brought the title back out west. 1995 UCLA comes in today at number two. So we reach the last team from out west that won a national championship, and we have to go back 28 years to the year that was 1997. Now, you know, every season here at the Dose, we hand a college basketball award to the highest seed in the tournament that disappoints us the most. It is called the Arizona Award. Why? Because Arizona usually wins it every single year. Well, except for one. Because back in 97, we all expected North Carolina or Kansas or Kentucky to win another title. But it was the Arizona Wildcats with Mike Bibby and Miles Simon and Jason Terry and Michael Dickerson that beat all three of those number one seeds on their way to their lone national championship in school history. 1997. That was the last time that a team west of Lawrence, Kansas or Dallas, Texas won a title. Since then, Utah, Stanford, Arizona, Oklahoma State, UCLA, Wichita State, Oklahoma, Gonzaga, Oregon, Texas Tech, and San Diego State have made it to the Final Four. Utah, Arizona, UCLA, Gonzaga, Texas Tech, and San Diego State made it to the championship game. And yet, no team out west has won a title in nearly 30 years. And I know that could change any season. But if I were to ask you right now, who could break that streak? Maybe Gonzaga? I mean, they've been close a few times, but who else would you even say? Yeah, it's kind of hard to come up with anyone, isn't it? I don't have the slightest idea. Like I said, it sure feels like college basketball right now is more of an East Coast thing. Hey, next week on The Dose, I am actually chasing a number of guests for The Dose over the next, let's say, month or so. You have to trust me on this. I've got some very interesting people that I'm going to be talking to over the next few weeks. You will not want to miss it. So be sure you check out The Dose and be sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to The Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, and for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
You know, spring, rejuvenation, rebirth, everything's blooming, all that crap.